several public hearings today. The first one, Senate Bill 630. Marjorie?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you had a public hearing on Senate Bill 630 on the 27th of March. It requires the State Board of Pharmacy to establish and maintain a database to electronically monitor dispensing of certain controlled substances. We have a number of amendments to consider today, the dash 2, 3, 5, and 6. And I think that Gary Schnabel from the Board of Pharmacy can help you understand this.
Okay. Gary, would you, and Alan, would you like to come up, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Schnabel. I'm Executive Director for the Oregon Board of Pharmacy. I had a couple of comments to make before I went into the amendments, if that's okay, or do you want to just go right into the amendments?
Go ahead and make your comments.
I'll make them brief. I just had three things I wanted to comment on. First, I wanted to remind the committee of the point I was trying to make during the first hearing, and I don't know if I did that very well, and that is simply that Senate Bill 630 creates no new authority for any investigation or any access to information data that doesn't already exist. If you read the bill carefully, it doesn't create any new authority, and it also does not create any new data. The data that's spoken about in the bill already exists in pieces out in the pharmacies throughout the state, and what we would do is take that data and keep it in a central database. The reason to bring this before the legislature is not to ask for any new authority. There are two reasons to bring this to the legislature. One is to ask for funding and for a program, and the other is to ask for a process or a package around that centrally maintained information to protect the information and the people about whom that information exists. I did, after the last hearing, write a response to a number of questions that were presented and raised and did not have a chance to get back to, so I created the board's written response to that. I did get around to committee members after that last hearing and provided a copy of that to everybody. We didn't really have much time to discuss them, but I think everybody got a copy, and I asked that response be entered into the record for this hearing. I don't need to do anything with it if you would enter that into the record. That's really all I wanted to say before the amendments.
We will enter it into the record. You want to go ahead with the amendments?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, these amendments that you have before you, number 2, number 3, and number 5 are amendments that I put together myself. I didn't have anybody offer anything to address concerns or to improve the bill, so I took my shot at it, addressing the questions that were raised. The dash 2 amendment would create an advisory committee, including primary stakeholders, I guess, the pharmacists, the physicians, the dentists, the primary prescribers, and members of the legislature, and to sit in an advisory committee and meet once a year and review the process and how the board responded to the responsibility. And this was an answer to some of the questions about, or the concerns about, how the Board of Pharmacy would act and whether inappropriate investigations or other inappropriate use of the material, the data, would be undertaken. This advisory committee would be able to review that and report. The Dash 3 amendment is in response to one of the Medical Association concerns about dispensing physicians having to report. It was not intended for dispensing physicians to have to report, but the language, as was pointed out, could be construed to require that. So this dash 3 is a way to point out clearly that the dispensing physicians do not have to report.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Fisher.
Why would a dispensing, physician not also be a prescribing physician?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, that's true. They would be prescribers. There are also a small number of physicians who are registered by the BME as dispensing physicians. They're primarily in an area where there is no access to a pharmacy, or for some reason they want to dispense to their own patients. They're allowed to do that if they're registered with the BME.
The follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Would they not be then feeding information into the program? And if they didn't, wouldn't that be defeating the purpose of the whole thing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, if there were large numbers of them, it would. There's such a small number of them, and it was such an issue for the physicians that we didn't feel like we would really be losing a significant amount of data. There are very few of them doing that and very few controlled substances, so it would probably not be a statistical significance. And as well, they are registered with the BME in addition to their medical license, so they have extra oversight by the medical board by the special registration they have to dispense.
Okay. Go ahead.
I want to make sure I have the right amendment. We're looking at dash 4,
no.
2, 3, 5, I'm sorry, dash 5.
Mr. Chair, before he starts in on a dash 5,
Senator Fisher,
are all of these amendments independent so that you would need to enact all of them to accomplish what you want? None of them contain the other ones?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Senator Fisher, we wrote those individually, so if there's a problem with one, the others could still be instituted if they were thought to be positive. So the dash 5 is in response to a concern about the use of the DEA number and the ability of these third parties who use the number to comply with this initially. They wanted some time, and we felt that that was appropriate. We weren't interested in trying to require somebody to do something they couldn't do. So this would simply say that after January 1st, 2006, this provision would become effective, and we think that's fine if they can comply by that date. And the dash 6 is, and I just saw that today for the first time, but this is an effort to repair what I think was a misstatement in the bill, or a misprint in the bill, where on line 37 of page 2, a reference is made to Section 5 of this Act. That's inaccurate, and it shouldn't refer to anything, so this would delete everything in that sentence after the word by, and then add this section. So it would read database as authorized by this section, line 37. Mr. Chair, that's all I have.
Questions? Okay. Alan, would you like?
No, I was just going to come up here and offer some to answer questions if there were any. Oh, excuse me. My name is Alan Dolick. I'm a practicing pharmacist in the state. I also am a member of the Oregon Board of Pharmacy. You have to excuse my empty and procedures. I don't do this very often.
Thank you. Andrea.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. We do oppose Senate Bill 630, and my apologies to the sponsors of this bill who did bring it before the committee about a month ago, and I simply was not available. And I think actually, though, fortunately, there was someone up there, or I'm not sure if it was Senator Morissette or Senator Minnis together, who wondered where the ACLU was. So we do have concerns. We're very concerned about collecting databases and creating databases, and this concern is not without some very large concerns currently with what's going on nationally. I don't know if any of you are aware of the Total Information Awareness Program that has been the brainchild of John Poindexter, formerly of Iran-Contra fame, who's in the Pentagon. This is a program that is being developed by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, and it is intended to make and create an ultra-large-scale database on persons, government records, as well as medical, financial information, political beliefs, travel history, prescriptions, buying habits, communications, family associations, et cetera, all with the goal of trying to find the terrorists amongst us. Now, this is not something that the ACLU alone is concerned about. This type of legislative program, and it's on hold right now, thanks to Senator Ron Wyden, who put a freeze on it, that was passed probably unanimously by the Senate. This is not an issue that concerns only the ACLU. I have before me a January 14, 2003 letter sent to key congresspeople that was signed by the ACLU, all expressing concern about this whole program, the ACLU, the American Conservative Union, Americans for Tax Reform, and the Eagle Forum. You know, when you get all those groups together, that there's something frightening going on in our country, and there is. So we really do come in under the concern with the databases, the collecting, and the mining that's going on. And I want to point out a few other things about the bill. On page 2, it has requirements that the information can be released to a federal, state, or local law enforcement officer who is engaged in an authorized investigation involving the person to whom the requested information pertains. So we're quite concerned about the exposure that this does without requiring any subpoena or necessary showing of probable cause or any elements before it's being turned over. In addition, although there's a confidentiality requirement on this bill, I notice that under Section 4, Subsection 5, there is no civil liability for a violation, if I am reading that correct. The last thing I want to touch on is a bit regarding late-term life care and death with dignity. Now, there may not be any agreement on death with dignity, but I think there's an agreement that the alternative consensus across the lines that we need to adequately deal with pain when people are at the end of their life. And we really do get concerned that aggressive monitoring and databases will be a chilling effect on the medical community to adequately and sufficiently provide the types of medicines and the types of treatment necessary for those who are dealing with the end-of-life treatment. I am happy to answer any questions, but those are a number of our concerns about this bill.
Go ahead.
Question, Andrea. You are a member of the bar, but this may be a question that you want to answer. On page 2, line 13, the information may be released to an attorney or other person representing the person. It was my reading of that it's awfully general, and I'm not sure exactly what it means.
Senator Morissette, Senator Minnis, I don't either, and I noticed with that language, the typical language that I think you see is that who the individual authorizes release to, that you have the power to release it, and oftentimes that might be another healthcare. I mean, I'm just talking about in general situations. It might be another healthcare provider. It might be your attorney for pursuit of in dealing with litigation. I'm not entirely comfortable with that, and nor do I know who else that would be. Anyone. I mean, representing. I don't know how the courts would define that.
Could be your insurance agent.
Could be. I don't know what representation means, but I doubt it's limited to just an attorney-client.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Others wishing to testify? Okay, we will close the public hearing and take a look at the amendments, and we will, we may come back with this one. We're going to have a work session. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 708. Marjorie?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 708 had its initial public hearing on the 27th of March, and it authorizes the State Board of Nursing to adopt rules regarding drug dispensing authority for certified nurse practitioners. You have the Dash 1 amendment that Martin Taylor and Tom Holt have been working on. I'm sure they would be willing to talk about.
Okay. Martin Taylor and Tom Holt.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association. We sure appreciate you hearing Senate Bill 708 again. As you may recall, we did have a short but eventful hearing on 708 once before, and the result of that hearing was to pass the bill to the floor, the do-pass recommendation from this committee. Concerns were raised that maybe a full airing of all sides of this argument weren't shared at that hearing, and to be honest, the Oregon Nurses Association was looking forward to having an opportunity to try to work out our differences with Mr. Holt and the pharmacists. So all involved were comfortable having the bill come back to committee, and as a result, we've had an opportunity to do some good work. I'd like to thank Mr. Holt for his participation in that good work. I think we have for you some amendments that will create a consensus that will allow 708 and later 709 to move through this process with relative ease. The major changes in these Dash 1 amendments are that we will now have an application process for nurse practitioners and later in 709 clinical nurse specialists who wish to dispense, and that application process will involve demonstrating that there is a dispensing access problem that needs to be solved. As you remember, the original need for nurse practitioners to dispense was to deal with those circumstances when they had patients or clients that were unable to get easy and quick access to medications when they needed them. It's not the interest of nurse practitioners and clinical nurse specialists to become pharmacies, but to provide relief for patients when it's needed. There will also be a training module for dispensing as a practice that will be created as a joint project between the Board of Nursing and the Board of Pharmacy. There'll be the State Board of Nursing will adopt the current ORSs around pharmacy dispensing rules as it relates to labeling and record keeping. The Board of Pharmacy will have the authority to notify the Board of Nursing of its intent to inspect a nurse practitioner or a clinical nurse specialist who's been dispensing and go into that setting upon notifying the Board of Nursing and make sure that all things are being done properly and legally. However, the Oregon State Board of Nursing will retain the sole authority for disciplining a nurse that's in violation of dispensing rules. And with that, our needs are still met by the bill as amended, and we believe the process has worked in a way that will allow the bill to move through the process fairly easily.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt, the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. I think Martin's given you a very good explanation of what the amendments do. The amendments answer some of the central concerns that we had with the original bill. And I appreciate Martin's willingness to work through this, and appreciate the chair's indulgence in allowing us the time to do this. And so with the amendment to 708 and the 709 amendment is word for word the same, except appropriate for that bill, we will no longer be opposed to the bills.
Okay. Good. Questions? Okay. Go ahead. You can leave. Gary, did you want to comment? I was going to open a work session. Okay, why don't you come up and we'll give you an opportunity. Yeah, you're summarily dismissed. I was almost going to close the public hearing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Gary Schnabel, Executive Director for the Board of Pharmacy. In a nutshell, the Board of Pharmacy was not able to come to the same conclusion that OSPA did, and
At their regularly scheduled meeting on April 9th, the board had a detailed, lengthy discussion about both of these bills and about the proposed amendments. And they, as a result of a unanimous vote, decided to oppose the bill and asked me to come and present that opposition. The letter that you have, you don't have. Oh, did you pass?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought you might have had that already. There is a description of the main points that the board discussed and had a problem with, and there are three main points here that are listed. During that meeting on the 9th, the board reviewed the history of the working together with the Board of Nursing and realized that for the past 15 years or more, the Board of Nursing and the Board of Pharmacy has worked together with a fairly good relationship on nurse practitioner issues, beginning with the first nurse practitioner prescribing issues and developing a formulary, a list of drugs, and throughout the years that has evolved to what it is now. The board also reviewed the current situation with nurse practitioner prescribing, and that is basically nurse practitioners have unlimited prescribing. They can prescribe anything that appears in a publication called the Drug Alert, Facts and Comparisons Drug Alert. That's a reference that contains virtually all the drugs that are available for prescribing. And the dispensing authority of nurse practitioners, which now is very limited, and it's again arrived at jointly by the Board of Nursing and the Board of Pharmacy, where they have identified certain limited areas of need, including county health clinics and student health centers and family planning clinics, and rural areas where there's emergency need, where there's no pharmacy available. So there is some dispensing authority, and the Board of Pharmacy felt like that current dispensing authority is appropriate, and they didn't feel like expanding that authority any farther would be in the public interest, and they wanted me to make clear that it's not a turf issue, but it's a public safety, public health issue, and related to the focus that pharmacists put on the drug and drug-related issues compared to the practitioner who spends their time with the patient doing the physical exam and diagnosing and office procedures and treatments. There's not much time left to deal with drug issues, and the pharmacist provides an important safety check. So anytime drugs are dispensed from any place other than the pharmacy, that safety check is missing, and the activities that the pharmacist normally takes part in is missing, and those are listed here under number 3. So I guess that summarizes what's in here, and we ask that this be put in the record. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
I'd just like to go on the record. My name's Alan Dolwick. I'm a pharmacist practicing in the state of Oregon. And just probably reiterate what Gary had said is that pharmacists and pharmacies offer a very important safety net. And I felt that it was probably my, you know, responsibility as a Board of Pharmacy member and a pharmacist in the state to come down here and just voice the concerns that I have, and that is the removal of that safety net. It's not uncommon for pharmacists to discover things that aren't known in a practitioner's office, or maybe that are omitted or missed in a practitioner's office. And the two big ones are dosing, the appropriate dose, and probably the biggest one is the drug interaction, or what we commonly referred to as DUR activities, drug utilization review, and you know, pharmacies by just their very nature are sort of the central point that actually, you know, you double check to make sure that there's no interactions with current medications maybe from another physician, and you know, if dispensing is done without that, I just have concerns about that, and that's really all I have to say, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
questions. Did you have a chance to read the amendments, the dash one amendments to the bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, we've had a chance. We were worked with OSPA along the way, so we knew that when they were coming out, what they were going to be.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, to follow up. The primary concern were on page 2, let's see, I'm sorry, on 709, page 2, line 11 and 15. Board of Pharmacy does routine unannounced inspections of pharmacies and the other clinics where nurse practitioners are involved. And the board felt like it's important to maintain that ability to do an unannounced inspection. That's number 4D on line 11. And number 5 on line 15, the board of pharmacy felt like they needed some sort of disciplinary authority.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Okay. Others wishing to testify? Okay, seeing no one wishing to testify, I will close the public hearing and open a work session. Do we have
work session on what?
708.
708.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 708.
Okay. Senator Walker moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 708. Discussion? Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Fisher.
I would move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 708.
Okay. Dash one amendments have been moved to Senate Bill 708. Discussion? I would call the roll, please.
Senator Menes?
Aye.
Senator Shields? Senator
Starr? Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator
Fisher?
Aye.
And Senator
Morsett? Aye. Dash one amendments have been moved. Do we have a motion for the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 708 has amended the floor of the Senate to the defense recommendation.
Okay, Senate Bill 708, Senator Menes moves Senate Bill 708 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Menes?
Aye.
Senator Shields? Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Senator Morsett?
Aye.
Okay, Senate Bill 708 passed unanimously out of committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do we have a carrier?
Well, I carried it last time. At least to re-refer it back to committee.
Okay, you want to try it one more time? Good. Senator Walker's the carrier. Thank you. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 709.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 709 allows clinical nurse specialists to prescribe drugs and medicine and formularies developed by the Oregon State Board of Nursing. And again, you have the dash one amendment before you.
Okay. Tom Holt and Martin, would you come up, please? Martin Taylor.
Senator Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Martin Taylor. I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. For the record, I just testified on Senate Bill 708, and I would say ditto. It's the same set of amendments on both bills. The only difference is we're now dealing with clinical nurse specialists who are advanced practice nurses that specialize in a particular area of nursing, and there are several here to testify in more specific terms about what they do.
Okay. I won't ask if you're a ditto head, but that's...
Probably not.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just want to take an opportunity to thank these two for working together.
You notice they're sitting
somewhat apart, but I do think it's good that the bill unfortunately went the direction it was probably not its best interest, and they actually worked together, so I appreciate that.
Good.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt, the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. As Martin said, these amendments to 709 are identical word for word to the amendments that you just had in 708, except with the appropriate Scrivener's changes to refer to clinical nurse specialists. And I would also be remiss if we didn't put on the record thanks to Charlie Cheek, who put a great deal of thought into helping us develop a balanced approach here between the two boards within these amendments. It was quite a bit of work on his part.
Okay. Thank you.
Ryan, legislative council.
Teresa, any other
comments? We have some dismissed by class.
No question. Thank you. You're dismissed. Teresa Goodall and Susan Davidson, would you please come up?
I'm going to deliberately sit right by her.
Okay, good. You agree then,
we're
right?
We're friends.
Oh, would you like to start?
Please and thank you.
I'll move the microphone over towards
you. Please do not move the microphone. Oh, maybe I should move myself.
Well, okay. you could really move the microphone.
I'm not touching
it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Sue Davidson. I'm a clinical specialist in diabetes and nutrition, and I'm also the nursing practice director at Oregon Nurses Association. You have in front of you the testimony that was to have been given for the initial hearing on this bill on March the 27th, and I'm going to just say very quickly, take some pieces out of this testimony. First of all, this is a needed privilege that clinical specialists seek. Having obtained statutory recognition in 1999, administrative rules written with the board in 2001, and now being certified and recognized by the board due to the work of previous legislatures, and we do thank you for that work. This role has existed for a long time. Actually, it began in the 1960s, and to this day, there are a number of clinical specialists in the state. We know of about 126 that are certified by the board. Clinical specialists are specialists. They're a lot like a board-certified specialist, only they're in nursing. They're master nurses, and what they do is provide care in a particular nursing specialty, such as oncology or asthma or diabetes, which happens to be my specialty. And frequently, what is needed is for that nurse, the clinical specialist, to be able to write prescriptions to deal with their patient's symptoms, with their problems, and to assist them with achieving daily living that is acceptable and a good quality of life. If they are unable to write the prescriptions, either for equipment or for medications, that is a delay in care, and sometimes it can mean, as we know, for psychiatric clinical specialists who are scarce in the state, it can mean that patients have to make additional trips to see the clinical specialist because they have to go find a physician who can write the prescription. There are 30 states in the country who authorize CNSs to prescribe drugs under the same statutory scheme as nurse practitioners. CNSs intend to require the same pharmacology preparation as nurse practitioners in this state, and additionally, they will prescribe using the same formulary as the nurse practitioners will, and they will be subject to the same requirements for dispensing and will support other regulatory provisions as necessary for ensuring public safety. I urge you to vote 709 out of your committee today, and thank you so much for enabling me to offer these comments.
Thank you. Question?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Teresa Goodell. I'm a licensed clinical nurse specialist, have been for 11 years. I've been a registered nurse for over 20 years, and I'm here today to just share sort of an example from my own practice that I think will illustrate why there is a need for this bill. I work in a program that's called photodynamic therapy. It's one of the only treatments, it is the only place in Oregon that provides this treatment at the center where I work. This is a treatment for people with either very early stage cancer or very late stage cancer, in which case the treatment is designed to provide comfort. The patients whom we treat then are often seen by their primary care provider, who doesn't know about the procedure we've done, and there are certain things that are very unique to this population, such as the side effects that they have, for example, and how long they're going to last, that can become a little bit vexing to someone who isn't familiar with the procedure. And as I said, there are only three physicians where we in the center where I work who do this procedure, and we are the only one in Oregon, so it's not something that's widely understood. understood. Frequently, patients call me as the clinical nurse specialist for the program to say, I'm having this problem or I'm having that problem. Their problem may be shortness of breath. It may be a cough. It may be that they can't sleep. It may be that they're having difficulty swallowing food. And as the person who is their first contact and the easiest person usually for them to get in touch with, they call me. And then oftentimes I find myself thinking, well, I know what you need. I know what drug this individual needs that would help them to relieve their symptoms, and yet I can't provide that. I have to refer them to a practitioner who may not be familiar with the procedure and may not be aware of what that exact need is for that patient to treat their symptoms. I had a gentleman just recently whom we treated for lung cancer who had a very difficult time with shortness of breath and coughing after his treatment, and he had to wait a couple of days to see his primary care person who wasn't familiar with the urgency of the situation because it can become urgent after this particular treatment. And so it's situations like this that make it important for a practitioner such as myself to be able to prescribe drugs to prevent that extra delay in care. And for me, it really comes down to an issue of providing access to care for people who are really quite ill to begin with and may have some significant side effects from this treatment. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Others wishing to testify? Seeing no others coming forward, I will close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 709. We have an amendment.
That's your amendment. Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 709.
Okay. Senator Fisher moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 709. Discussion. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Minnis?
Aye.
Senator Shields? Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Senator Morrison?
Aye. Okay, the amendment has been added to Senate Bill 709. Do we have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 709 as amended with the Dash 1 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Fisher moves Senate Bill 709 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Minnis?
Aye.
Senator Shields? Senator
Starr? Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Mr. Fisher?
Aye.
Mr.
Morrison? Aye.
Senator Shields just came in.
Senator Shields just came in. I will wait for just a moment. Do you wish to vote on Senate Bill 709?
Yeah, I've been out of the room testifying on another bill. I apologize, sir.
Okay.
An aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Senate Bill 709 is passed unanimously to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill. Okay. Thank you. We will close the committee hearing for the day. And we will adjourn.
Good work.
I did that.
Oh, we didn't move it. That's okay. I think it will.
Cool. Now, let's talk about whether or not we want to break 6:30 back.